Blog Talk Radio.
Well, welcome again, my friends, to Trisha's True Crime Radio. I'm delighted that you're joining me tonight. It's me and me alone. I have no Kimster as a producer, and I have no guests yet, but they'll be here shortly, I'm sure. I believe we do have one right here. We have Richard Hornsby. He is the attorney, an attorney in Florida. Mr. Hornsby, are you on the air with us, I hope?
I am. How are you doing?
Okay. I'm great. Mr. Hornsby, if I could have you hold just a minute, there's a couple of little things I need to do, and that's part of the legal goo, as we call it here on Web Sleuths. Do remember, opinions expressed on Trisha's True Crime Radio are those of the hosts and the guests. Trisha's True Crime Radio is completely separate from WebSleuths.com, LLC, and ForumsForJustice.org. So don't blame Web Sleuths or Forums for Justice. If you hear something on this radio show, you come to moi, and we'll discuss it, okay? Okay, and Trisha's True Crime Radio is brought to you by the brand new forum on Web Sleuths. It's the Web Sleuths Weather Forum. If you like to talk about the weather, follow the weather, do weird, strange, kinky things with the weather while you're home alone, then you're going to love the new weather forum on Web Sleuths. Go to www.websleuths.com/forums. Scroll down until you see our up-to-the-minute. Click on it, and then you are in the weather. Well, today in the George Zimmerman trial, I'll tell you, it was boring. To me, the defense had a great day because pretty much the witnesses helped the defense. And I don't see what is going to happen unless they have some sort of Hail Mary pass that the prosecution is going to pull out. I will be shocked if this man is convicted of anything. The one person testified that he saw a person in black clothing on top of another person that was wearing white or red clothing. Well, that's Trayvon on top of George. And that the guy on the bottom was screaming help. I mean, it just did not bode well for the prosecution. But I want to hear Richard Hornsby's take on it. Because, Richard, there is one thing that you are, and that is brutally honest. You're going to tell us the truth. You're a lawyer in Florida. You're a defense attorney. Tell us your thoughts on the Zimmerman case, please.
Well, my initial thought after listening in the last 4 days is, why are we even here? You know, the only thing they've proven so far is that someone died. They haven't proved that it was a result of a criminal act, in my opinion. I mean, every single witness that has testified has, the first few witnesses, none of them could say definitively who was on top and who was on bottom. You know, and that none of them can actually speak to what, you know, started this whole altercation in the first place. Then we have the guy today who basically said George Zimmerman was on the bottom and he was getting basically haymakers raining down on him, you know. And then you have the only witness you have that even remotely, I think, suggests that it was George Zimmerman that started this fight is this girl, Rachel Dontell, who, you know, yes, she's a terrible witness, but we know that part of what she's saying has to be true based upon the phone records, but the real bottom line issue is whether or not her statement, get off me or get your hands off me or whatever she said that Trayvon said, you know, is enough to prove that it was George Zimmerman that actually started this fight. And I don't know if that's enough for this jury, you know, to believe. Not only do they have to believe her, but they have to believe that issue beyond a reasonable doubt to even get to the issue of whether or not a crime was committed, and I don't think they've even got there, you know. And you have to prove that, you know, a crime was committed before you even start thinking about self-defense.
So do you think that this jury of six women will able, and this is a bad question to ask, but hey, I'm a lay person, I don't know, do you think they'll be able to acquit him with all the political pressure? Is that a real possibility?
You know, I don't know, because the problem with having six women is that you don't have anybody on there that's probably ever been in a fight that can talk about what it's like to be in that situation. So they're going to be making a lot of illogical, I think, leaps about, you know, what would I do or what wouldn't I do. And I think the state attorney is actually playing to that a lot, because the state attorney keeps pointing out about how fine George Zimmerman was after all this was over. You know, and I think for a woman that's never, for any person, but, you know, it's most likely that a woman's never been in a fight. You know, when you're in the fight and you're getting your head beat in, you're thinking like you're about to die. But, of course, afterwards you realize that maybe, you know, it wasn't as bad or something like that. And I think the state's really playing to that possibility that these women will not be able to, when they go back to deliberations, use life experience to kind of decide how reasonable George Zimmerman's, you know, feeling was when he decided he had to resort to his gun is the first thing. The second thing is there is one minority witness on, or juror, I'm sorry, on that the panel. And in listening to what some reporters have been saying, she seems to be the one who seems to be favoring the state witnesses or the state theory, I guess, a little bit more so than the defense. And she seems to be looking over at Trayvon Martin's mother a lot. You know, and I don't really read too much into that, but it just makes me think that, you know, there are, I have seen jurors that just don't want to, they don't want to quit somebody because of how it'll make the victim's family feel.
Mm-hmm. So, well, that is,
you know,
a real
all,
possibility.
Those are all real issues that we may see, you know, and the one thing I have seen a lot happen a lot, and especially in kind of contentious issues like this, is you see a compromised verdict where the jury, you know, they don't want to let somebody off, even though they probably should, so they say, all right, well, we'll come back with manslaughter or something like that, which would not be a win for George Zimmerman, because if he goes to prison, he's going to die in prison.
You think so? You think he'll be attacked?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, listen, he is, you know, with a high African-American population and, you know, and the fact that he is probably public enemy number one in the African-American community, you know, he would be a target in prison, there is no doubt. And so unless they put him into, like, some type of solitary confinement for his entire stay, he'd be a wanted man. And I think he knows that, and I don't think he'll find, a person, white or black, that probably would say differently, you know, if they're speaking truthfully.
We're speaking with Richard Hornsby. He is a defense attorney. He also writes a great blog. He's been a guest on our show several times. And he practices law out of Florida. So he gets Florida. He knows Florida can be a tad bit wacky at times. And we have a lot of questions for you. Here's one that I think is really interesting. Do you get the feeling that the prosecution, is it possible that they could be fumbling this on purpose, like they just didn't have a case, so they're just putting it up there and it's obvious that George is going to be acquitted? Is that a strategy they had? I mean, that they felt they had to go forward with nothing?
I have seen prosecutors that have gone forward with cases they didn't feel like they really wanted to go forward with, but usually it's because of, you know, their bosses making them. I just have a hard time believing that Bernie De La Rionda, considering he's number two in the state attorney's office, would do that. You know, they put a lot of preparation in this case, so I don't think they're doing it to throw the case. I think, you know, I don't know, because why would you hide evidence? Why would you be so contentious with defense if you don't really have a dog in the fight? So I don't, you know, I can't even guess right now, to be honest with you. I think that I couldn't imagine they would under the way they've been acting. You know, usually when a prosecutor is kind of throwing in a towel, like I've had prosecutors like, tell me straight up, I've got to take this case to trial, the victims won't let me drop it, or, you know, my boss is making me. You know, and they let you know, and they don't, you know, they don't fight tooth and nail. And so it's the exact opposite of what we have. So I don't think that's the case in this particular trial, although, yeah, I've seen it before. It's not uncommon.
Okay, that I can understand how that would be hard to wrap your head. It's hard for me to wrap my head around anything like that. This is just the oddest thing I've ever seen, Richard. It's like all the air has gone out of the prosecution case. And, you know, when you think about
it seems they had a case. You have to remember that.
Well, that's,
you know,
true.
Depending on how you look at the evidence, I don't, you know, I was thinking about it today, you know, when you don't have Ben Crump spinning the evidence, you know, and kind of giving you a false narrative, there really isn't a case there. I mean, think about it. Who else are they going to call that could actually make George Zimmerman look incriminating? There's no more. There's only, like, I think one more witness, and that's the child who has changed his story, who originally said he saw the guy with the red shirt on the bottom, and then once his mother was got an attorney that's related to Ben Crump, he changes the story to know it was the opposite.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, other than that, there's nobody else that can actually put George Zimmerman there. So I don't think they have a good case, you know, from day one.
I think you're absolutely right. Do you think lesser charges will be included when the judge gives the jury their instructions? And who decides those lesser charges? How does that work?
Well, there's what's called mandatory lessors, and a mandatory lesser is manslaughter. The question will be whether or not the judge has to instruct him on manslaughter by acts, which is the kind of reckless commission of an act, or manslaughter by culpable negligence, which I think a lot of people would kind of think that he could be convicted of. The problem is the way they charged the second degree murder, they didn't allege any negligent activity on his part. So if I'm the defense, I'm saying, Judge, you can't instruct them on manslaughter by culpable negligence. It's not appropriate. They didn't allege any facts that would support that. You can only instruct them on manslaughter by act. But getting aside from that kind of legal argument that's a little bit difficult to really debate on here, there are, after manslaughter would be probably aggravated battery or felony battery, and then would be what's called culpable negligence, which is a misdemeanor, which I've seen a lot of juries come back on. But again, that requires the judge to agree to give manslaughter by culpable negligence as a lesser as well.
Here is a question, Richard, that kind of makes an assumption, and I don't know if you're going to agree with the assumption, but I think it's a good question. This person believes that Rachel was telling the truth, that George Zimmerman pursued Trayvon and instigated the altercation. If Trayvon was attacked by George during during an ensuing scuffle, George shot him in the heart, is that not a disproportionate amount of force to use in this scuffle, especially since, and this is the assumption here, George's injuries were superficial? In other words, wasn't that, and I don't mean to make this horrible pun, but wasn't that overkill for George to take out his gun and shoot him? Or what do you think?
If all that Trayvon did was punch him in the face, and be like, what do you want, you crazy-ass cracker, or something stupid like that. Sure, pulling out your gun and shooting somebody is a disproportionate response. But if Trayvon Martin punched him in the face and then had him on the ground, and as we saw Marco Mero point out, George Zimmerman had more than one or two scrapes. His entire head on almost every side, there was was injured, there was welts, there was everything. If he's getting his head pounded in and he feels the blood, you heard Marco Mero. If you listen today, you heard Marco Mero have the two witnesses testified. You would have the blood draining back in the back of your throat. You would taste the blood. You have swelling on your head. These wounds are consistent with getting your head beat against concrete. First off, those aren't what exactly superficial? Does Trayvon Martin have to stab him before he can decide to pull out his gun and stop Trayvon Martin from smashing his head in? At what point is it before you? Because what happens if George Zimmerman passes out? Maybe they're superficial wounds, but if he passes out and then Trayvon Martin keeps kicking him in the head, well, he might die. Where do you draw that line? And that's why self-defense doesn't require you to have to be nearly dead. It only requires that you reasonably believe that if you don't act now with some type of deadly force, you can use it. And so, that's why I hate I get a lot of people who say, oh, what if? They give these very fact-specific, minute, unrealistic scenarios, and they say, well, this happens. Well, the reality is that life doesn't happen in these fact-specific scenarios that we dream up. The reality is that's why they call them life or death, decisions. And the self-defense law, errs on the side of protecting your life, not the other person's life. And so you don't have to be on the cusp of death before you can result a deadly force. If you think that, this person's not going to let up and you're not going to be able to get away, you can resort to your gun. And that's what George Zimmerman did. And I got to be honest, Marco Mero did a great job of pointing out how much injury, George Zimmerman actually had to his head. It was pretty significant.
Right. It was. And that was something that we didn't learn until fairly recently, just how significant those injuries were. And when you compare it to where we were last year with what we knew, I was one of those people. I thought, George Zimmerman, what an animal. Let's go to Michael in Minnesota. He is my unofficial sidekick who always comes up with better questions than me. Michael, this is Richard Hornsby. He is one of our great friends and an incredible attorney, and he can really zero in on the law for us. Michael, do you have any questions?
Hi, Richard. I'm enjoying listening right now, and I will pipe up as soon as I have good questions for him.
Okay, good.
He's already answered several of my questions, so.
See, he can read minds. He doesn't like people to know that, but he really can. He does it wherever he goes. And let's see, hold on here. I accidentally put somebody on the air that I didn't mean to, and I believe this is Cheryl McCollum. Cheryl, are you with us, my darling?
Hey, how are you? I'm sorry, I'm running a little behind tonight. Sorry.
That's okay. You are forgiven. Cheryl, I don't know how much of the conversation you heard of Richard's, but we've been talking about today's lack of testimony for the prosecution.
Yeah.
I feel like if there was a picture that I could draw today, it would be of a person yawning with their hand over their mouth. Talk to me. Help me,
Trisha,
here.
I told you last night, it's over. There's nobody else they can call. And, I jokingly said, who else are they going to call? Several other people that don't know anything. And once again, they put up an expert, the medical expert, and when you're listening to her, you think she's Mr. Zimmerman's witness.
What did
Everything,
she say?
Well, she said several things. She said that, yes, his nose is more than likely broken. Yes, there, these, you know, abrasions and this swelling is consistent with somebody that's being hit, the head trauma. And here's the thing, Tricia, in closing arguments, they're going to paint such a picture. Every single person in your audience has hit their head like on a cabinet door or something where they just saw stars and their eyes watered and it hurt like crazy. And it did not break the skin. So you imagine the magnitude of breaking your skin in two separate places and the separate bumps and abrasions that he had. What that means is when he says, I thought I was going to lose consciousness, and if that happened, he would kill me. That is what a reasonable person would believe. So he acted appropriately. And there is zero evidence that that did not happen. They have put up zero evidence that George Zimmerman did not act in self-defense.
What
Cheryl,
did you guys
you...
make of Smith, Smith's testimony that shortly when he had handcuffed George and they were walking to the car, and George said twice, I was calling for help and no one would help me. I was calling for help and no one would help me. I thought that was the most powerful moment, but not for the prosecution. That's
not
for the defense once again. Yeah,
he goes to the doctor.
It.
He doesn't. He doesn't make up a story for the doctor and say, "Oh yeah, I fell down some steps." He tells her, "I was attacked." And again, now you have a medical person that says, "Yeah, that's consistent with his story." And I told you, Tricia, months and months ago, that I have never in 30-something years had a suspect claim they said what the victim said.
Oh, that's true.
And
that
again,
was a little odd.
When George Zimmerman says, I was screaming for help, why would Trayvon Martin scream for help when he's not being injured at that moment?
Right.
The only person that needed to scream for help was the one who's getting their behind whooped, and that's George.
Right, and he was calling out specifically to the neighbor that had stepped out.
And please keep in mind, when George says, I was screaming for help, if he were lying and it was actually Trayvon, George did not know at that time that there were not witnesses that were watching who was screaming. George is not that smart. There's nobody that thinks he's that smart.
Well,
your
we've all
statement
right.
is likely the most truthful. And his has not changed from that.
You're absolutely right. And Richard Hornsby, what do you think about the fact that what George Zimmerman said is what he has, it hasn't changed at all. And the fact that he said, I was calling for help. George Zimmerman, I agree with you, Cheryl, is not bright enough to think, I better say this so the cop will think that it was really me calling for help. Don't you agree?
Well, I do, but it looks like what the state's going to try to do is bring up his education in criminal justice and bring up, you know, his experience to show that he was just that smart and diabolical that he could make these things up on the fly.
When are they going to get to that?
Well, apparently, if you've looked at the discovery, they've listed his criminal justice professor, whose testimony they're going to perpetuate, and they listed his criminal justice book, which isn't even it wasn't really a criminal justice book, it was a paralegal book, but nonetheless, they're going to list that stuff, and I think that, it's a stretch, don't get me wrong, but that's what their theory is that he lied about all this because he was smart enough because he knew what he had to say to create his defense. Now, I don't think that's consistent with reality because you have all these witnesses that are basically saying he's saying this literally within seconds of it happening. No one's that smart. That's this state they're not prosecuting reality, they're prosecuting fiction. And that's all there is. I mean, I think I said this a year ago when you had me on. I think George Zimmerman's a douche, and I don't think he's innocent, but I definitely don't think he's guilty of a crime. You know, this is something that's, I think it's a tragedy is what it is.
Well, and I think so too, Richard. I agree. I've often said when it comes right down to it, George Zimmerman was the adult and he had the gun. He had all the power. You know, but as you were describing it tonight, Richard Hornsby, about, you know, how guys have been in fights and everything, I tried to imagine myself with somebody on top of me hitting me. I'd be terrified. I'd pull out a gun and shoot him. I know I would, because I'd be panicked. I would think I was going, I would absolutely be convinced I was going to die.
Absolutely.
And I just, Richard, maybe you can wrap your head around this and explain it to me and to our listeners as well. Was it all political pressure that caused the prosecution to bring these charges?
You know, it appears that it was a lot of political pressure, a lot of maneuvering. Because, you know, here's what happened. I mean, you can take this and do it with it what you want. I've never been a big conspiracy theorist, but this one kind of has some legs to me. Because, you know, you have Ben Crump, who has had some dealings with Pam Bondi before. You know, the first thing he does is he accuses Norm Wolfinger, the local state attorney, of racism and, you know, and some other things. Wolfinger gets offended, recuses himself, and throws it back to Scott, who has to point somebody. And who does Scott point? But Ian McCrory, who is, in some ways, it's a godsend for both of them, because, one, he looks good in the African-American community by, you know, appointing this really no-nonsense prosecutor. But the problem is this prosecutor has her own accusations of racism, which she's constantly dealing with, and she's so just right-wing in her prosecution of people, especially African-Americans. And so she has an opportunity to now look good in the African-American community. And what does she do? She doesn't convene a grand jury. She instead files a charge herself. I mean, could you imagine if a grand juror had heard Mr. Good today testifying about, you know...
Oh, exactly.
Right, they would have never indicted anybody on this.
And let's talk about that.
Know,
that
so,
was very. Oh, go ahead, please continue.
Go ahead.
No, I was just say it was really shocking.
Then you go to the witnesses. Each of the witnesses seem to have a connection to Crump. You have that little boy who I mentioned earlier. His mother, I believe, went to college with Crump, and you know, of course, there's an attorney who I work with. Her name's Alicia. She works with me at the station I work with, but she ended up being appointed to the mother, and Alicia would intern to with Parks and Crump's previously. Then you have this girl, Dee Dee, who has an attorney, and the attorney has connections to Crump. You know, obviously, again, the African-American legal community is tight-knit, so that's not, it's not that, you know, unexpected. But again, you have this attorney that has this key witness that has an attorney connects to Crump. You know, never mind the fact that, you know, the Martin family meets with this witness first, and, you know, and then they get a caravan to drive this witness to meet with the prosecutor, and then the prosecutor allows Trayvon Martin's mother to sit in on the interview. I mean, that is the most unheard of thing I've ever heard in my life, because that's the one thing they teach you in any police classes. You don't have a parent, you know, I know it's not the perfect, you know, example, but like when you have one parent accused of molesting the child, you don't have another parent, you know, sit in on the interview, because you want the child to speak the truth. You don't want to feel pressure from this outside adult influence. And here you have Trayvon Martin's mother sitting in on the interview. I mean, that blew my mind to hear that. That's the most unethical thing I could ever imagine. Then you have, you know, these two or three of the witnesses today, their media interviews with ABC and all this, where they came out and they said on the news basically things that were negative of George Zimmerman, that made George Zimmerman appear to be the one that was on top. It turns out that Parks and Crump, or Crump more specifically, his media team is the one who scheduled all these interviews. I mean,
brother.
You go down the line to just about all of these witnesses, except for, like, you know, Good is one of them. Any witness that wasn't tainted by Crump is very consistent with George. And even the ones that were tainted by Crump, the problem is they couldn't get around their initial statements. They were kind of locked into them, luckily. And so there they are. And then you have to, obviously, Crump and Sharpton and Jesse Jackson accused the Sanford Police Department of, you know, doing a terrible job and of racism and all these other things. And at the end of the day, I mean, how can you not at least see there? Is it a political prosecution? Yes. Clearly it's a political prosecution. The fact that they didn't get a grand jury should tell you that. And is it some kind of conspiracy? Listen, Crump's a good attorney because he was able to get, you know, he spun this the way you expect lawyers to do it. And unfortunately, I think it's an unjust thing, because what I keep coming back to in my mind, it just blows me away, is that if the colors of these two people's skin were reversed, you know, how I could imagine, like, I have so many African-American friends, especially, that'll say things like, you know, I can't believe they want to bring in Trayvon Martin's past. And I keep going, well, what if it was, you know, Trayvon Martin was on trial and they wanted to bring in George Zimmerman? You know, then, it, you know, of course you would want it to come in. You would want, you know, all his drug use, and you would want all the fact that he's got all these fights. And it just, it blows my mind that, you know, African-Americans are routinely, you know, discriminated against and persecuted in many ways in the criminal justice system. Suddenly all these things that, you know, are meant to protect the defendant, they think are unfair. And I'm like, we, you know, let's not forget, like, when this case goes away, the main problem in the African-American community is unfair prosecution
exactly.
against African-Americans. You know, and it blows my mind that, you know, that they're holding a double standard here.
Well, I do think there is some a part of a double standard, absolutely. And let's talk a little bit about the grand jury. In Florida, is it unusual for a prosecutor to skip a grand jury and go straight to a murder charge?
Absolutely. I mean, there's no other answer to that. It's as simple as yes.
Really? Because in Utah, you know, we don't hardly have any grand juries. So that's why I didn't understand it was a big deal. But in Florida, it is, apparently.
Well, it's a big deal in this case. I mean, when you have a case that... Whenever you have an accusation of a botched job, whether it's by the prosecution or the police or anybody, I mean, the simplest solution to that is let the grand jury decide, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's that simple. And you know, I don't know of one human being. And the problem is I've met grand jurors before, and they tend to be, you know, because they're handpicked by state attorney. It's not like you pick a jury and you weed out all the people that are you know, liberal and conservative. You know, a grand jury is handpicked by a prosecutor to be the most, you know, right-wing, you know, pro-law enforcement, pro-convict everybody there is. And they'll, you know, there's a reason they say they'll indict a ham sandwich, because they would. And I don't know if one of those people that would have indicted somebody on this case. I mean, it's crazy. I mean, it's absolutely crazy.
Absolutely.
You know,
Cheryl? Yeah, Cheryl McCollum,
no,
please weigh
absolutely.
In on that.
Well, I'll tell you another thing, and I'll kind of speak like a victim advocate for a minute. You have got people that have had other, you know, loved ones murdered in Florida, and their case has not gone to trial yet. And yet this one has gone this fast. You know what I mean? So there's no question it's political, and it's driven not by the fact they've got this, you know, ironclad, you know, airtight case. It is, politically motivated. It's media generated. And what you're going to see... Again, is remember when the defense was asking for more time and the prosecution was like, no, 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 let's go, let's go, let's go. Then O'Mara is not stupid. I believe that was absolutely deliberate. So they cannot come back and say, well, they made us go too soon. We only had 10 months to prep people. Really? Okay. I think
good Lord.
He's just setting them up because every single witness, we have said it repeatedly every night, he's flipped everyone. On the major issues, he's flipped everyone.
And
this case has been over for 2 days. And anybody that's truly watching it, Tricia, the only way you convict this man is because you were going to do it anyway, and that just becomes jury nullification. They are not convicting him by the rule of law or the evidence that has been presented. Because, again, every single prosecution witness said, no, it's consistent. No, he was on the bottom. No, he looked like his mouth was open, but I wasn't sure. I mean, every single person, they don't know the street names either. Yes, there's been burglaries. Yes, they voted him, you know, to have the position to make sure the neighborhood was safe. Who in the world has the prosecution put up that makes you go, oh, man, wait a minute. Maybe he really did want to be a cop wannabe. Nope. The exact opposite. Well, maybe he really didn't want to hurt somebody. Nope, the exact opposite. Well, he only called when it was blackmail. Nope, the exact opposite. Nice try.
So,
where are
right.
we, Tricia? And if somebody that has worked their entire career for the prosecution, I have never been so stunned in my life on a case that is this weak. Now, with that said, arguably I've worked with some of the best prosecutors known. Y'all know most of them. They're, you know, they have their own show. They have, you know, a seat at most other people's shows. And I've been very, very fortunate to work with some incredibly professional and intelligent people. But this is the weakest prosecution case I have ever seen on a murder two charge.
So, but next week, let's just wait and see. Maybe, and I'm being a Pollyanna here, and I know this is ridiculous, maybe next week when they bring up all of George Zimmerman's cop experience or criminal justice experience, I should say, the books he's read, the courses he has taken, maybe they're going to have a shining moment that might help them. Am I being absolutely ridiculous, Cheryl?
Yes.
Yeah, I can tell you are, and here's why. You convince
okay.
somebody on the facts that happened on the night of the incident. You don't convict them on, you know, some hindsight 2020, second guessing Monday morning quarterbacking. I mean, that's just ridiculous. I mean, because this is the bottom line. You tell me if someone walked up to a cop, punched a cop in the face, and then got on top of that cop and started hitting him, anybody would even for a minute think that cop wasn't justified in pulling out his gun and shooting the guy? I mean, mm-hmm. It's insane. It's not even we're not even having this discussion. We're talking about what a punk this guy was that this cop saved us from, you know. And so how do you go something because George Zimmerman might have been educated? I mean, I don't even remember what I've learned in half my law classes, and you're going to tell me that suddenly I should be held to the standard of everything that's in that book? It's insane.
Now, Georgia, let me just weigh in for 1 second as a college professor in criminal justice. Most of those books are theory-based. Most of them barely touch on realism. They're all theory. It's all academia. What
mm-hmm.
occurred with George was street-level assault. It wasn't covered anywhere.
Right. They don't cover that.
Most college professors don't talk about vigilante unless it's like a one paragraph or,
mm-hmm.
you know, 20 minutes in a 4-hour lecture. It's not something they talk about. Just like with Neighborhood Watch, it was one slide. And
mm-hmm.
I bet she breezed right over it. It's not an issue that the majority of people talk about. And here's the thing. Let's say Dee Dee had a government class, or Dee Dee had, you know, American court history or forensics class at her high school. That sure Lord didn't show.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, just because you take a class, I can memorize a book on how to fly an airplane doesn't mean I can. I can memorize a rule book to lacrosse. It doesn't mean I can officiate a game. You're asking me to believe that George Zimmerman picked up some college textbooks and figured out, hey, I know how to kill somebody and get away with it.
Here's the thing.
Not at the point he's getting his own behind whooped.
Here's the thing, and I would like both of my guests. We're talking with Richard Hornsby. If you go to, I believe your website, Richard, is richardhornsby.com. Is that correct?
Correct, yeah.
Okay, I would advise everybody to go there. It's a great website, and he is a fantastic attorney. Also with us, Cheryl McCollum from the Cold Case Investigative Research Institute. We're talking about the George Zimmerman non-trial, basically, is what it seems like it's happening here. Both of my guests I want to address, and Richard, let's start with you. Isn't it almost too premature to be saying it's over, even though as bad as it looks for the prosecution, don't you think there could be something next week that just kind of flips it on its ear and changes things? Is there anything you think that could happen?
No, well, I mean, we still have to listen to George Zimmerman's interviews, but, you know, the funny thing is, I think the prosecution was banking, I think the prosecution was banking on, you know, it being able to be proven, because so many witnesses said they didn't hear him saying help, you know, because he claims
mm-hmm.
he said help, help, and you hear him setting the prosecution setting this up, but it turns out we have at least one witness, again, that John Good, who says, yeah, he said to help at least 3 times or at least 2 times, possibly 3 times. You know, we have John Good who, and then you have George Zimmerman said, my head was beat that gets concrete. And you saw the prosecution, their opening statement kept alluding to how that was impossible. But suddenly
mm-hmm.
we have John Good again saying it was right by the sidewalk and, you know, and they slid back into the sidewalk. And then we have this medical doctor who's saying, you know, yeah, all those little abrasions and bruises are consistent with getting your head beat against concrete. You know, and then, you know, and everybody, it's funny because the one thing everybody thought that picture of George Zimmerman's front of his face was photoshopped. I mean, any Trayvon Martin supporter you came across would say that I didn't even know for sure if it was real or not. I don't know the evidence as well as I did Casey Anthony, but, you know, everybody, it looks Photoshopped. It's so grotesque, but it, you know, if that's how you looked right after you got your, you know, you got the system.
Mm-hmm.
And here's the thing. Yeah, sure, Trayvon Martin didn't have any injuries, but that's exactly it. He didn't have any injuries. How do you, you know, if George Zimmerman did something so brutal to Trayvon Martin, you know, how did George Zimmerman get these injuries? You know, and it's funny because it's George Zimmerman's right side of his face, which is all beat up, and it's the, that's the one place where Trayvon has a corresponding injury is his left fist, which would be the fist that would be hitting George Zimmerman's face. You know,
mm-hmm.
and so, you know, is there something that will turn it? Do I think the only thing left is George Zimmerman's interviews, and I don't think they're going to be as earth-shattering as the state thought, because we've now heard evidence that's consistent with just about everything, single thing George Zimmerman said.
And Cheryl, Cheryl McCollum, your thoughts on my ridiculous possibility of next week, that prosecution possibly turning it around.
You're dreaming, because here's what has actually happened. You remember the crime scene tech, when she was like, hey, there was no blood on the sidewalk.
Mm-hmm.
The neighbor explained that away. So here's what they've actually done. They've shot themselves in the other foot. He made such a big deal that there was no blood of George Zimmerman on Trayvon Martin's hand. We even scraped his fingernails. There was no evidence. There's no evidence on the sidewalk either, which means the rain washed it away, which means when the defense calls their expert in crime scene and says short-lived evidence gets washed away in the rain, even in concrete, even in the crevices of your hands,
mm-hmm.
there's your reasonable doubt again, and they have proved it before the defense has to say a word. So here's the deal. Let me give you an analogy.
Okay.
You're at a striptease show, right? The music plays.
Oh, all the time. Stars. That's where I go.
Absolutely.
Yep.
That's where you and I met. So
absolutely.
All of a sudden, the dancers come out, right? And they were mm-hmm. like, yes, here it goes. Something's going to happen. And they keep dancing, and they don't take off their bow tie, and they don't take off their jacket. So we're waiting. Let's order another drink. They're dancing, whatever. Still nothing. Well, then eventually they kind of take off a jacket. All right, still not what I'm expecting. Well, eventually people start to leave. When people are leaving, you best take something off.
Mm-hmm.
We have left the building, and they aren't even trying to take anything off.
They're still fully clothed, and we're wanting to see naked bodies.
Nothing.
They
got nothing.
Go. Michael in Minnesota, do you have a question or a comment?
I most certainly do. I think you're kidding yourself, Tricia, if you think something big is going to come up next week, because any prosecution I would think would want to come out with a bang
mm-hmm.
that supported their opening statement somehow and then finish with a bang, but so far, there's been no bang whatsoever, and every bang they think they score has been turned on its ear by the defense. So, no, I think we would have heard it if there was a big bang.
I'm telling you, what has caused me to always question happened a long time ago, and that was the Elizabeth Smart kidnapping. I was so sure that they had Richard Reese dead to rights, and come to find out, it was clueless. She was alive. She had been living with this guy. And ever since then, I look at every single case. And until I hear that verdict, I'm always thinking there's going to be a surprise somewhere. Richard Hornsby, you're in the legal community in Florida. Is everybody saying the same thing? Like, what the hell is the prosecution thinking?
Yeah, there's actually a friend of mine or fellow defense attorney posted something on Facebook about, you know, leave your comments. And I've seen several
mm-hmm.
prosecutors from the Orange County, where Jeff Ashton's from, state, you know, basically, this is how this case even going to trial, looking good for the defense, et cetera, et cetera. You know, and even if you just keep, look at the online, only the Sentinel, all the different analysts say this seems to be going the defense's way. Now, I definitely, here's the thing, I mean, I don't even think this thing should get to a jury, I'll be honest with you. I mean, I know that's a little bit, I think there are some judges that wouldn't even let this go to the jury, because I don't even think they've proven a crime was committed yet. All they've proven to me is that, you know, two people got in a fight and one of them ended up dead. They didn't prove
mm-hmm.
that the person, you know, that there was a crime that precipitated it or, you know. But, you know, the problem is that this judge isn't the type of judge who will ever dismiss it. I think there's going to be no doubt she should reduce it down to manslaughter before it goes to the jury, but I don't even think she has the will to do that. So we go with the what's left as a jury, and what will the jury do? And again, we come down to this problem of six women who, you know, none of them, you know, are like criminal justice majors or are in the criminal justice field as like friend Cheryl there is. And they're going to be sitting there, and, you know, and you have that one juror, I tell you, kids looking at Trayvon Martin's mother, and they're going to be like everybody seems to be, is like, this is, you know, it's such a tragedy. He didn't shoot had a gun, blah, blah, blah. And I can totally see what we call a compromised verdict, you know, of like manslaughter, which they're going to think some big, you know, gift. But as I've already said, you put this guy in prison for one day, and he's as good as a dead man.
What is the sentence for manslaughter in Florida?
Well, it's maximum of 15 years, a minimum of about, I think, 12 years. So, you know, prison.
Oh, no.
Yeah, it's a long time. I have a couple of questions for Richard Hornsby. Richard, do you think George will take the stand?
If they play his interviews, I do not think he will take the stand, as long as they play all of his interviews. You know,
why
is that? There's no need for him to take the stand.
Okay.
He tells us the whole story, and all he could do is screw it up by telling something inconsistent with his prior explanations.
Absolutely. Also, can you explain the legality of it being self-defense? If somebody, let's say somebody's following you, they're not doing anything, and you're in a place that you don't live, and someone's following you, you turn around and attack them because you're afraid, and they in turn kill you, which is kind of what people are saying that happened here in the Zimmerman case. If someone's following you nonviolently, can you turn around because you're in fear of your life and start pounding them legally?
Yeah, if Trayvon Martin if George Zimmerman would have been following Trayvon Martin would have been perfectly within his right to turn around and deck George Zimmerman. I'm not saying that's, you know, saying I thought this creepy-ass cracker was following me and I would protect myself. That would be defensive. Trayvon Martin could raise self-defense if he was charged with a crime. The question then turns to the next step. The next step is, though, was George Zimmerman, is George Zimmerman allowed to defend himself even though it was Trayvon Martin only initiated this fight because he was actually protecting himself? The answer is, George Zimmerman can equally defend himself just as well. And so then you take it to the third analysis is, was George Zimmerman's use of force reasonable? If Trayvon Martin was just punched him and then ran away, then no, obviously you can't pull out your gun and shoot some kid that's running away. But if Trayvon Martin punched him and then they start to scuffle and Trayvon Martin got on top of him as George Zimmerman's claiming and starts bashing his head against the ground, and George Zimmerman starts feeling like he's about to pass out, afraid that, you know, this guy's going to stop, then George Zimmerman, in my mind, would be perfectly within his reason and right to pull out his gun and, you know, and end this confrontation before it ends him.
Cheryl, what are your thoughts on that?
I'm going to say again, he had at least 4 minutes to go home. He did not go home. Didi testified he was out of breath. There's no way a 17-year-old football player gets out of breath running 70 yards. The other issue becomes when he gets George on the ground and hits his head a few times, he couldn't get off him and run away. He had already immobilized him at that point. So his intention was not to get away. His intention was to confront and attack. And that's what the prosecution has put up and proven beautifully. They have no evidence whatsoever that George Zimmerman did anything but try to see which way he went and then look for an address. And that's what every single person has said. The real estate agent said, yeah, you couldn't see my number from the street. He would have to walk closer. No, if the light doesn't illuminate it good enough, you'd have to walk right up on it. Exactly what George says. He even took a flashlight with him because he couldn't see.
Go ahead, Richard.
Go ahead.
One of the other interesting things we've learned about this, you know, everybody had this angelic, you know, picture of who Trayvon Martin was, and we've learned whether like it or not, whether it's admissible or not, whether it's character assassination or not, the truth is he apparently got into a lot of fights based upon his own text and the way he describes himself and what he would do. This was not a kid who, you know, was making straight A's and was like Urkel. This wasn't who Trayvon Martin was, no matter how much they want to portray him as it. You know, and what was most telling to me was when Dee Dee testified, I mean, she, the first day she testified, I mean, my jaw dropped when Don Weston go there, but she goes, I figured he would just call me back after he got in the fight. I didn't think it was a big deal. Excuse me? You didn't think it was a big deal that he got in a fight with a complete stranger? Like, mm-hmm. she made it sound like, you know, that was not something out of the ordinary for him. Everybody's like, well, when the phone hung up, how come you didn't call him right back? Or how come you weren't concerned when he didn't call you back? She's like, I figured he just got in a fight. Well, excuse me? You figured he just got in a fight and you weren't concerned? That's the first day. And then the second day, she testifies to something similar. She goes, well, if Trayvon was going to go confront him, he would have called me first and let me know that's what he was going to do. In my mind, I'm like, so you mean this guy is confronts people enough that you know what he would do?
How he would act? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So clearly, Trayvon is a tough guy in his 17-year-old world, or you know, or however old he was. You know, and she knew that, and you know, Don West dropped the ball by not driving his truck through those two openings to find out why in the world she thought it was perfectly normal for him to get in a fight with a complete stranger and not call her back, you know, and not be concerned. You know, so that's the other problem too, is that, you know, I can't believe Don West has gone there, but this jury may get a false impression of Trayvon Martin. I don't care what you say, you know, and you can't spin his phone records. His phone records speak for themselves, and, mm-hmm. you know, this kid would, I don't know what the proper term is, whether he was, like, in the fight club or, you know, but clearly he was going out, and he was engaging in activities that were just as intense, if not more, than George Zimmerman's MMA, you know, classes.
Yes, please do. Cheryl McCollum, go for it.
And again, it may or may not, as we know, come out, but even the autopsy report talks about the tattoos on his body. Those are gang tattoos. Now, that's not going to come in. But again, a lot of this stuff that we know on the outside is coming in. We also know he attacked a bus driver. It mm-hmm. was a grown man. So we have proof that he will attack someone in authority or that is grown. And I want to just really, again, Tricia, I hear what you're saying. As a mother, I believe what you're saying, but there is also a reality. And the reality is there is not a 17-year-old football player that I could get off of me if I tried.
Right.
You know
me
that.
Neither.
And
me
in
neither.
This country, mm-hmm. you know, we have 17-year-old gang members that are assaulting people all the time. We've got home invasions, we've got drive-by shootings, we've got sexual assaults. You know, look at them. It's a different world. So when somebody says, well, okay, you know, they profiled him,
mm-hmm.
or had a reasonable expectation that this person was up to no good based on something they have seen repeatedly, there's a
right.
difference. And I'm going to tell you one more thing, and I would love to hear what the defense attorney has to say, because honey, you are remarkable. I'm captivated listening to you myself, yes. But you do not call a press conference yesterday when you're winning. And you don't stand there and tell everybody what a great job she did when Facebook and Twitter and Instagram and everybody else is making fun of her. There's not a blogger that hadn't made fun of her. Oh, she's an overnight sensation, but it is the most negative, because I'm going to tell you something. The President of the United States came out and said, if I had a son, he would look like Trayvon. I guarantee you he's not going to come out and said, I've got a daughter, I hope they act like Dee Dee.
Good point.
Hey, man.
Richard Hornsby, is that true? If you're the prosecution and you're winning, you don't call a press conference like they did? I thought that was so odd.
Well, the defense called a press conference yesterday, too.
Yeah, but
so
they're winning. I mean,
right,
the prosecution called and said, hey, you know, we think that she did really well, and we're very,
pleased. Wasn't the prosecution. That was the Martin family that did that.
Oh, okay. I was thinking that was the prosecution. I'm sorry. That was the Martin family. Okay. Well, yesterday the
right.
prosecution did have a press conference, and I didn't see it, so I was thinking of something else.
No, I don't think the prosecution has had a press conference.
Okay, so that's who it was. Wasn't the prosecution,
yesterday,
Cheryl.
Yesterday it was the Martin family, and specifically Daryl Parks of Parks and Crump. He's
mm-hmm.
the attorney that spoke, and he said he was proud of Dee Dee for what she did. And then
okay.
Mark O'Meara had given a press conference 15 minutes prior to that.
Got it.
The prosecution has not given a press conference.
Okay, I'm glad we got that cleared up. You know, that look at what we're doing. We're we are confusing the prosecution with the person's family attorney. That's how closely they're interchangeable sometimes in our minds, even if it's subconsciously. Richard, is it possible that, let's just say, for some bizarre reason, they find George Zimmerman guilty of second-degree murder? How easily will this be undone on appeal?
Wow, I mean, I think there's a major, the most obvious appellate issue is the failure to allow them to continue this case to prepare correctly. I think some of that was undercut, or the value of that appellate issue was undercut when she excluded the audio experts, because, you know, obviously that would have been the primary thing they would have been unable to prepare for.
Mm-hmm.
You know, among other things. But so, you know, that's the first thing. And the second thing is, I have a feeling that Judge Nelson shut Don West down when he tried to go through the opening that John Tell seemed to provide about Trayvon Martin getting to fights. So they had a big bench conference when she finally did start asking about it, and I think she said he couldn't go there. But, I mean, it's pretty clear to me that Rachel Dontell opened the door with the way she testified about Trayvon Martin. So that would be a huge appellate issue. There's been a few other things, nothing that screams reversal to me. But the most important thing is, if an appellate court got this case, there is no way that I think an appellate court would let a second-degree murder conviction stand. I think they might be willing to let a manslaughter conviction stand, but there is no way they would ever find this evidence supports second-degree murder. I'm pretty sure they would, what we do call, reduce it down to the appropriate judgment, which would be manslaughter. Now, that, you know, that's completely my thought, but those are the only legal issues I see.
Let's talk about Law School 101. If a witness opens a door, you are allowed to drive that truck right through that big open door. Is that correct? I've learned that on watching Law and Order. That's my legal experience. But isn't that pretty much it? Or can the judge, you said that would be a great appellate issue. Wouldn't there be a time where the witness said something that they shouldn't say and they won't let them open the door? I mean, isn't that just a judge's decision, or is it just pretty cut and dry?
Well, it's a judge's decision at trial, but if the judge should have let the attorney go in there, because the judge can't just willy-nilly say, no, I'm not going to let you go there because I don't think it's relevant, the judge has to have a legal basis for whatever her ruling is. You know,
mm-hmm.
And so it's what we call an abuse of discretion. Did she abuse her discretion by ignoring applicable case law? And I would say that she was ignoring applicable case law about the relevance of BD's. Because here's the thing, it doesn't matter whether or not Trayvon Martin actually got into fistfights all the time, or was actually a brawler or a street fighter or whatever you want to call it. What matters is what he led her to believe, you know, whether he was boasting to her or whatever, to explain why she didn't think it was unusual for him to get in these fights, explain why she didn't think it was unusual for him to just go confront random people and, you know, let her know in advance. That's what's important. So you're not offering it for the truth of that he's actually a fighter. You're offering it to show her state of mind and why she, you know, did or didn't think something was unusual. And that's clear-cut case law that should be admissible. And, you know, and so the judge would be abusing her discretion if she didn't let that in. And I think
mm-hmm.
that's what happened.
Okay. I know everybody's got things to do. It's a Friday night. I don't. I have no life. I could stay here all night, but I know you all do. So let's kind of go around the table here and wrap it up. Michael, my friend, my darling, do you have any more questions?
Well, truthfully, I said it before and I'll say it again. This judge seems to be erring on the side of the prosecution, and I don't appreciate it one bit. I'm really concerned, and I hadn't even given thought until Richard talked about what could happen to Zimmerman. I mean, it's a death sentence if he goes to prison.
Mm-hmm.
That never even entered my mind, but he's absolutely correct, and I don't believe he deserves that. And my heart goes out to the Martins for losing their thug son, but at the same time, I could not convict Zimmerman on anything I've heard.
We do have a question that on the phone here. Let me go to the phone lines really quickly. Area code 661, you're on the air with Cheryl McCollum and Richard Hornsby.
Hi, yes, I have a question. Would it be possible for them to reduce the charges to manslaughter?
You mean just have the judge? Yeah. Just have
yeah,
the judge reduce the charges. Okay, good question.
Yes.
Richard Hornsby, your thoughts.
Right, after the state presents their case, that's exactly what will happen. Is the defense will ask the judge reduce the manslaughter, saying they haven't presented sufficient evidence to support a second-degree murder charge. If the judge does mm-hmm. reduce the manslaughter, they'll then make a further motion to dismiss the case entirely, saying that it also doesn't support the lesser charge of manslaughter. I've had murder cases in front of this judge, and I don't think she'll do either. Even though I think there's many judges that would not only reduce it from manslaughter or reduce it from second degree murder to manslaughter, I think there's many judges that would dismiss this thing outright. But this is not a judge that's going to ever give you that benefit.
You've worked with her then in the same courtroom. Does she tend to lean towards the prosecution? Do you think?
Well, yeah. If you followed me, I predicted just about everything she'll do in the favor of the state because I've lived it. I knew that she wouldn't agree to continue the case. I knew that she wouldn't do anything about the sanctions. Because I had all these same issues with my murder case. And granted, my murder case isn't really as important in people's minds as their own case, but it had a lot of the same issues that were raised. And the funny thing is, when it comes to victims and violent crimes, she's a pro-prosecution. She's like having to set another prosecutor in the room. Otherwise, she's a very empathetic judge, and she can be very fair when she's dealing with, like people that have drug problems and things like that. She's a very empathetic person, but otherwise, she ain't ever giving you the benefit of the doubt if you're a defendant.
We do have some calls coming in. If you don't mind, we'll take them very, very quickly because they've been holding a long time. This is area code 901. Area code 901, do you have a question for Richard or Cheryl?
Yes, hi. Thanks for taking my call. I'm calling. I have a question for Attorney Richard there. I keep hearing them keep saying that Zingerman followed Trayvon and ran him down. Nothing could be farther from the truth. They keep trying to spin that. What I heard the defense say that when Zingerman got off the phone, he was heading back to a place where they could locate him, and he was going to call them. They would call him once they got there.
Mm-hmm. And so what you're saying is that everybody's trying to present a totally almost the exact opposite of what feel really happened. I think Cheryl McCollum, that would be a good one for Cheryl to address. Cheryl, is that pretty much what's happening here? Cheryl? Uh-oh. We've lost Cheryl. Uh-oh, we lost Cheryl. Okay, Richard Hornsby, we're going to take you, my dear. Is that a good one? Do you feel that that's kind of what's happening? Is the opposite is what is really the truth here?
Well, what he's saying is what is George. That's what George Zimmerman's claimed in his interviews. If you listen to him, is he said that he was actually trying to find where he was, and that while he was doing this is when Trayvon Martin basically circled back around him.
But the prosecution is almost trying to portray the exact opposite, aren't they? I mean,
right. Well, the prosecution's whole theory is that George Zimmerman chased down Trayvon and basically went berserk on him.
Mm-hmm.
And it just does not fit it doesn't fit the evidence, it doesn't fit the facts, and it doesn't fit the majority of the witness statements. There's just you really have to stretch the truth to stretch the known facts to get to their conclusion. And the funniest thing I found about I've been trying to put my finger on what exactly this prosecution is doing. It's almost like you're trying to raise, it's almost like the roles are reversed and they're the defense now. They're just trying to raise enough reasonable doubt to make that jury want to convict because the case is so clearly, not guilty. It's really bizarre the way it seems to be. So they're just trying to instill some reasonable doubt as
mm-hmm.
to George Zimmerman's story so that the jury will just convict him out of sympathy for the family, which is sad.
It is sad, and boy, that, like Cheryl McCollum has always said, there are no winners here. We have a mother and a father who has lost their son. They love Trayvon. Trayvon to them was their baby, and we can all understand that. George Zimmerman, how his life has been turned upside down. There are no winners here. I know, Mr. Hornsby, you do have to go. Talk about your website for us briefly. Give us the address and say whatever you'd like in closing.
If you're in Orlando and you get arrested, give me a call. Richard
Hornsby. RichardHornsby.com. If you're in Orlando and if you go to Disneyland and you're caught lifting something, Richard Hornsby, richardhornsby.com. Check out his website. Mr. Hornsby, thank you so much. It was a pleasure having you on, and I hope you'll come on again real soon.
Thank you. Thanks,
Matt. Thanks. Bye-bye. Okay, well, that's it, and my apologies to all the callers that are on hold. I apologize. We are just running out of time here, so we're going to come back on Sunday. We may touch on the case just a little bit on Sunday, but we are on every night of the week while the trial is on Monday through Friday, so you can catch us then. Sunday, we're going to talk about the tragic discovery of the partial remains of Dylan Redwine and what has happened since they have been found, what is going on with that family. And we're going to talk about the latest in true crime that is all over the place. Now, do remember, the opinions expressed on Trisha's True Crime Radio are those of the hosts and guests, and Trisha's True Crime Radio is a completely separate entity from websleuths.com, LLC, and forumsforjustice.org. In other words, if you hear something you don't like on here, you can't blame anyone else. You just got to blame the person who said it, and you got to come and talk to me, and we'll talk you down. We'll make everything okay. It's Trisha's True Crime Radio, where we discuss true crime and current events, and we always do it with common sense. Good night, everyone.